This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back and join us once again on the highway to the Impact Zone. I, of course, am your host, Logan Crosland, and I'm glad all of you listeners have decided to take this ride with us. If you joined us last time, we covered the Impact episode number 2 and the weekly pay-per-view number 99. Tonight is our 4th episode, and we will be covering the 3rd episode of Impact, along with the 2nd anniversary show, or pay-per-view number 100. Let me now welcome in my co-host, student, and dear friend, Jacob Williams. Jacob, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. We're going to get into some interesting stuff on this show. I'm trying to remember if it was last episode that we were not too high. Was it 98 or 99 was the one that we were not too happy with the pay-per-views?
I think it was 98. I think that was the one with the gauntlet on it. Maybe one of our experts will know. Let me bring them in and maybe they can fill us in. We got our two experts with us as usual. Firstly, I'm going to introduce, he is the host of Piece of the Action, and he's the angriest guy I know, Matt Souza. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing well, and I can tell you that it was indeed 2 episodes ago because I was on that show, and that gauntlet from hell has not left my memory yet, so...
Well, I don't know if we're gonna bounce back too good.
I was gonna say I don't think last episode was great shakes either, but I definitely thought that was 2 episodes ago. Secondly, our second expert tonight is on the other end of the spectrum. He's probably the jolliest guy I know, and he's my chicken salad buddy, Ben Locke. How you doing, Ben?
I'm very good. Logan, yes, it was definitely 2 episodes ago. I think we all got quite angry about it. The scars are still real.
Very, very, very real. All right. Ben and Matt, the shows we covered last time, episode number 2 of Impact and weekly pay-per-view 99. Ben, what were your thoughts on those 2 shows we covered on the last episode?
I thought they were quite good shows. They were quite good building blocks to what we've got coming tonight. Obviously, they're treating like the 2-year anniversary as the big show, in quote unquote. So this and the Impact are building to that. I particularly liked Impact because I thought it focused a lot on the X Division. The pay per view was basically just an advert for the pay per view 100. So that was neither here nor there. I'd have been a bit pissed off at the time. I think I'd have paid £10 for it.
Yeah, I think I would have been too. Matt, what did you think of last week's shows?
Yeah, pretty much all agree with what Ben said. Impact, I thought, was better than the pay-per-view. The pay-per-view, like, it had a decent main event that was, like, not really big in star power, but it was pretty good for what it was. And it felt like a Survivor Series 91 to this show's this Tuesday in Texas.
That's exactly what I was just thinking when you were going on. I was just thinking that it's just like Survivor Series right before Tuesday in Texas. But all right, let's head on into the Impact Zone at this point. Mike Tenay welcomes us saying that the countdown to the 2nd anniversary show is almost up and informs us that we are starting Impact with a 6-way X Division match. That 6-way X Division match includes Michael Shane, Chris Sabin, Elix Skipper, Miyamoto, Kaz, and Hector Garza. Tenay does a really good job at the beginning of this match when they're all coming out, kind of explaining who they are and where they come from. Miyamoto is a wrestler that wrestles in all, been wrestling in all Japan at this point, and Garza, the other foreigner, was from Team AAA. He had been in the World X Cup and was the team captain, and we've actually seen him a few times at this point, but he did a really good job of explaining kind of what everybody's story was and who they were. they show a guy in the crowd wearing a mask from the movie The Mask. I thought that guy looked really stupid, but
yep.
You know.
Yep.
In this match, they use the tag rule in this match, which always kind of annoys me, but I think they're going to keep doing that, so I guess I better just get over it. Kaz and Sabin start the match, and you can already tell that this match is just going to be go, go, go the whole time, and there's going to be just absolute nonstop action. Shane and Skipper both eventually tag themselves in, and to keep the quick pace going, Shane hits a pretty sweet top rope Hurricane Rana. Shane gets in a little trouble and tags in Miyamoto. Skipper hits an awesome spinning back kick on Miyamoto. I made the comment that Tony Schiavone would have called it a spinning back leg kick that time. Garza then tags himself in on Skipper and hits a few quick moves and goes for the cover, and that brings every competitor in to break it up, and this turns the match into a high-flying clusterfuck, and they just hit move after move after move after move, and it eventually culminates in Hector Garza hitting the corkscrew moonsault for the win. Jake, what did you think of this first X Division match?
Yeah, I think it's kind of what we've come to expect, especially on Impact when they bring out this many guys. I was excited because I feel like I'm starting to get everybody now. Like when everybody came out, even without them telling me, I kind of had a decent idea of, I mean, besides Miyamoto, because we haven't really seen him, I kind of knew who all these guys were, which is, I feel like, an accomplishment because they're not, you know, a lot of these X Division guys kind of have a similar look for the most part, and they don't really have super defined characters that we know. So I was kind of excited that I kind of was familiar with everybody, so I wasn't struggling as much to figure out who was doing what. Like you said, it just sort of, your boy Posey lost control for the second half, and things just kind of broke down. I did like the spot where Elix Skipper did his signature, like, tightrope walk thing, and it got reversed, which I thought was good because it makes sense that somebody would do it. He does it every single match and sort of telegraphs it, so it made sense that I forget who it was because it was hard to keep track, but I like that they reversed it. That was a good spot to not just let him do it. What do y'all think were the chances that because they cut to Dusty watching backstage because he's obviously the X Division judge, what do you think the odds are that he was actually watching this? Or you think he's, I feel like he was probably watching like I don't know, like a Western movie from the 60s or something. Like, I feel like there's no chance.
Yeah, he's definitely no watching.
I always think it's... Yeah. Like,
no, that was just B-roll. They just happened to be shooting of Dusty, you know, watching some movie backstage, waiting for a taping to start, and they just run it whenever they can.
He's definitely watching MASH or something.
Yeah, he had the sound turned down, at least.
He strikes me as a Matlock type of guy. Yeah.
It's just funny to me, like, the juxtaposition of him being the X Division judge, because Dusty as a wrestler is probably the furthest you could get from the X Division. So it's just kind of funny. Like they got Dusty in as the expert on the high-flying, you know, guys. But anyway, I thought it was pretty good, like, from what you'd expect from this. They do a lot of cool moves and all, you know, not a ton of... I mean, they did try and play in the psychology of the match with the tags, doing a lot of ghost tags, so I thought at least... made sense. So, but it was just kind of a fun, like a frantic opener, which was, Garza didn't connect too well. The only bad part about the finish with the corkscrew kind of hit him like almost in the shins, it looked like, when he landed. So, but I guess that's just the nature of this type of move. So I went 2.5 on it, just kind of a good frantic opener that we kind of, oh, we got an update on Russo, guys. I don't know how you forgot about that, Logan. Come on. Got an update on Russo's condition.
Sorry,
very important. So I went 2.5.
I got you. Ben, what did you think of this one?
So in the first episode I was on, I moaned about the fact that they didn't introduce any of the X Division guys. If you remember, it was like, here are these three schlubs who are facing AJ. This match, like you said, Logan, it was a lot better. It was just like 10, 15 seconds, just Tenay introducing every guy. That's all they needed. So, you know, I'll give it to them, 3 episodes in, and they've got that sorted. Yeah, I was kind of like Jacob said, just waiting for Posey to lose his shit, lose control. I also liked the psychology around the missed runner. It was Michael Shane because I made a note of it. Yeah, a really good match. I went 2.5 as well.
I got you. Matt, what did you think of this one?
So, yeah, like the other guy said, just completely nonstop action, and pun fully intended. And like Jake said, Garza just landed square into Miyamoto's shins with that twisting moonsault. Looked like a pretty pretty rough impact, huh? Another one fully intended on Miyamoto. But the other thing I like about these X Division matches too, especially on Impact, is it feels like something you would have seen on like Nitro in 97, where they just take, you know, six cruiserweight guys, let them do their thing for 5-6 minutes and just blow away at any other wrestling that would have happened on that show. So I like that about it. And I ended up going 2 3/4 on this.
I gotcha. Yeah, I really like these nonstop action kind of things, or kind of matches where it's just constant move after move after move. And I went 2.5 as well. After this, we are welcomed back from commercial to the Naturals making their way to the ring in their AMW gear that they had stolen the previous week. As they make their way down, AMW comes out of nowhere and attacks them, but security, a.k.a. the Harris Brothers, come out and quickly take AMW away. After this, Sabu and Sanjay Dutt head out as this will be our next tag match between the Naturals and Dutt and Sabu. Stevens and Dutt start the match where Steven begins working on Dutt's arm. Dutt uses his speed to quickly change the momentum, only for Douglas to cheat to take back momentum. Dutt eventually gets the hot tag to Sabu, and the Homicidal Maniac uses his crazy springboard attacks to take over the match. Sabu eventually hits the triple jump moonsault and tags Dutt in to hit the Hindu press, but Dutt misses with this top rope attack, and the Naturals hit the Natural Disaster for the win. The Naturals, after the match, attack Sabu, but Sabu eventually fends them off with a chair. Matt, what did you think of this tag team match?
It was decent enough. Yeah, it just felt kind of, I don't want to say plotting, but I don't know. It was just outside of like Sabu's moves. Like, I didn't really care for like the heat segment stuff on Sanjay. I thought it was just kind of fairly basic. And I do want to mention Sabu was wearing awesome black and silver tights. Those tights looked awesome. But yeah, it was fairly standard stuff. I ended up going 2.25 on it. But, you know, decent stuff, but nothing really spectacular. And Sabu pretty much hit everything, which was a miracle in its own right. So no big botches from Sabu or anything like that, but solid stuff.
You got to take your miracles where you can get them on that one. Right. Jake, what'd you think?
Yeah, pretty in line with Matt. I went 2 stars on this one. I felt like the main focus of this was kind of like to give Sanjay a little bit of a spotlight, and kind of both as like Kim and his offense and the selling, which I thought he did okay. He didn't like blow me away or anything, but I guess they just wanted to give him maybe a chance to show something, because a lot of what we've seen is just him getting his ass kicked a lot. So I guess they wanted to legitimize a little bit, even though they lost, which I thought was kind of surprising. Like, I was surprised the Naturals won, because what I've seen from them so far, they don't seem very high on the totem pole. I don't know if they're trying to build them up. I just felt like Sabu and Sanjay are in kind of a marquee thing with Raven right now. So I thought maybe they would give them the rub over the Naturals, but I guess maybe they want to elevate the Naturals to feud with AMW. So I guess maybe that's the I guess maybe they were trying to have their cake and eat it too, like make Sanjay look good, but then he still loses and puts the Naturals over. So yeah, it was just like a decent tag match, like Matt said. So 2 stars for me.
Yeah, I think they're really just trying to get the Naturals elevated so they could say they had a win over two pretty good opponents. So Ben, what do you think of this one?
So there was two takeaways I had from it. Number one, you just mentioned the fact that they were building the Naturals up to be the next main contenders for the AMW title. They probably should have got the title at the 100 pay-per-view 100, but as we know, that did not happen. The other thing I liked was the story that they were telling in the match, which was basically the Naturals knew they could beat Sanjay, they couldn't beat Sabu. So If you watch the match again, like, they absolutely kill Sanjay all the way through it. But as soon as Sabu gets that tag, it's game over. And then they manage to manipulate manipulate it where they pin Sanjay in the end, and I really like that. I thought that was a nice bit of psychology and storytelling that you don't see very often.
Yeah.
My match rating was 1.5, but I could have gone to 2.
I got you. Yeah, these paint by numbers kind of matches I usually go to on, but yeah, I really like that they're trying to build the Naturals up to be more credible in the eyes of people going up against AMW as AMW is a very established and great tag team. So I hopefully we'll get some good matches between those two coming up in the next few weeks. After this, we go to a package chronicling Dusty calling out Raven for his disrespect towards the Sheik. After that, we get back from a commercial, and we get Shark Boy with Jacob's boy Popeye checking out Universal Studios. yeah, I was a Shark Boy hanging out with Popeye, and it was basically just an infomercial to get people to go to Universal Studios.
It worked on me. I wanted to go back. Like, I haven't been in a very long time, and it made us like, man, I need to go to Universal.
Yeah,
I want to meet Popeye.
Really? And Shark Boy.
Oh, man. Yeah, I think I went to Universal Studios later this very year that we're covering, so I guess I missed out on the Shark Boy Popeye fun. But but after the little infomercial, D-Ray makes his way out for his match with the Monster Abyss. Kind of like every other Abyss match, this was nothing more than a quick squash to put Abyss over as a monster. Abyss decided to show a little chest meat tonight, unbuttoning his shirt.
The beef out, taco meat.
Let the beef out. And Abyss hits an awesome black hole slam, as always, for the win. Jake, what'd you think of this one?
Yeah, it was squash city. I think D-Ray did get a few moves in, actually, which surprised me, which he didn't look great. They also used this as a vehicle to hype up the saga of Abyss and Eric Watts and all that crap that's been going on with Goldilocks and all. So they used the little time this had to remind us that that's a thing that's happening. So I went a 0.5 star on this one.
I got you. Ben, what did you think of this one?
So I was quite bored. I didn't rate it because it was literally only 2 minutes long. But that ain't a bad thing because Abyss is one of the best squash workers around. The black hole slam's a thing of beauty. And I think I'm right in saying, in my head, I'm just thinking out loud, his music's probably my favorite in TNA. So yeah, I was on board with this. Got no problem. I always like it when the face tries to do a big move on the heel in a squash match and they just bounce off the guy.
Yeah, that is always fun.
that always pops me.
I gotcha. Matt, what did you think of this one?
Yeah, D-Ray got way too much of his awful-looking offense in, but yeah, complete and utter squash, 0.5 star.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'd probably go in the 0.5 star, 1 star range. So, but the black hole slam always is good for a star for me. So I'll go 1 star on this one. After this match, we go back to commercial. And once we come back from commercial, Mr. Aguila is on his way out to the ring to take on X Division champ AJ Styles. So our next match is AJ Styles versus Aguila. At the beginning of the match, the crowd is super hot for AJ. I wrote down that Aguila looks like he just came off his shift at the Mexican food stand at Universal Studios with his black wife beater he had on. At one point, Styles does a pretty impressive standing vertical suplex where he stood there for about 10 seconds just holding Aguila up in the air. Cash and Dallas appear on the stage at some point during the match to kind of distract Styles. After a quick back-and-forth contest, Styles eventually catches Aguila doing a Hurricane Rana and hits the Styles Clash for the win. Cash and Dallas come in for the post-match attack as per usual, and D'Lo Brown comes in and makes the save and grabs a mic. Brown says he's going to make an impact, another pun, and by challenging the winner of the NWA title match between Killings and Jarrett on the pay-per-view coming up. Matt, what do you think of this little match and segment?
Again, fairly solid standard stuff, not bad, and pretty long match, at least long for Impact standards. I think it goes like 7.5-8 minutes, which is a long time for a match with AJ Styles and a guy who you hadn't seen on Impact before. So I thought that was pretty interesting, given Agia a showcase like that. But I thought it was fairly standard overall, and I ended up going 2.25 on it. And I know we don't like to look ahead here, but I'll tell you that if a Jarrett D'Lo Brown feud had happened, it would be a lot better than what we end up getting in the summer, let me tell you.
Oh, my.
Look, now I'm really looking forward to it. Ben, what'd you think of this match in Professor Tech?
So yeah, I like Matt, also really like the fact that for Impact it was a relatively long match. It's one of those matches that I think got ruined by the break. You know on Nitro when they used to have the tape machines rolling, you're like, no, I want to stick with it. I also like the fact that they mentioned it was non-title due to the pay-per-view title defense. That was a nice little touch. I'm glad you mentioned, Logan, about the vertical suplex, because I have got in my notes AJ thinks he's the bulldog. So I'm glad you mentioned that. I also didn't think much. I don't know how you guys felt about the cliffhanger DDT. That was just that was not a great move. I also went 2.25. Like I think I would have gone higher if we'd have seen the full match instead of having the break cut out 2 minutes.
Gotcha. Jake, what'd you think?
Yeah, pretty much in line. I went a smidge higher. I went 2.5. I thought it was a good showcase for AJ, and it almost was like a squash in its purpose, and that it was kind of showcase AJ and get him over, but they just extended a little bit, I guess, because you want to give AJ more time because he's, arguably the most over person on the entire roster. And I thought Aguila played his role well, and he had some good counters to stuff. And I always love how AJ works in the Styles Clash. Like, he doesn't just usually, grab it. Like, it's interesting because it doesn't seem like a move that you could pull off the, like, out-of-nowhere thing, but he always finds ways to do it, which is awesome. Like, he almost, in the same way, like Jake with the DDT, it's like, he's always looking for a way to put it on there, which it is a complicated move, so you don't really expect it. So I always enjoy that, how he just finds a way to counter into it and hurry up and lock it in and slam him, which is always cool for me. Post-match, I thought it made sense for Cash and all to come to continue the feud. The D'Lo stuff is just so odd to me because it's like he just comes in. It's almost like he's trying to steal AJ's shine a little bit because he just comes in for the save and he's like, I'm going to challenge the champ. It's like, and that's all there is to it. And just, he's got to get better clothes because I don't buy him. He just comes in his like bootcut jeans and his like random flowy shirt. Like, he gets a little better on the pay-per-view. Like, he gets a little bit better fat, like a little bit more. But I feel like if you come in and you're like going straight for the top, like I want to challenge the champ, you got to come in. This is an issue I have as we go on through all of this, is some of the fashion choices I feel were odd to me. Like, they could have done a little better. But well, to be fair, it's just
it was
weird.
TNA and it was 2004. So I mean,
yeah. So yeah, but anyway, I just think maybe on the pay per view he comes with a dress shirt. He looks a little more legit, I guess. But yeah, he really wants that title shot because he never shuts up about it.
And he really, really likes using the word Impact. I mean, he literally uses it like every promo. Yeah. D'Lo's outfit kind of looked like a low rent Booker T at the time. Booker T kind of wore these kind of outfits. But yeah,
do you get a feeling like Russo told him backstage, you've got to say Impact all the time?
Oh yeah, I would say somebody was definitely in his ear say Impact every other sentence.
Well, he made an impact, so I mean, if you make an impact, you got to talk about making the impact. Impact, impact, impact.
I would argue he has not made an impact.
The only impact he's making is in catering, so all right, after this we get our they do one of these TNA Rewind moments every week. This week we get a recap of Sting and AJ Styles facing Jarrett and Lex Luger from the previous November's pay-per-views. And we get teased that next time we'll see what Jeff Jarrett did to Hulk Hogan. So, after that, we go to Tanae and West, and they give us the lineup for the pay-per-view. They list off all the matches. So we got the stretcher match. We got Jerry Lynn versus Scott D'Amore. We have a minis match. We have AMW versus Team Japan, which is Nasawa and Miyamoto. Then we have Kid Cash and Styles, and then Jarrett and Killings for the NWA World title. We then get the hype package for the stretcher match where they make the comment of Desire's back was broken, but not her. What did she say, Jake?
Not her spirit.
Oh, but not her spirit. That's right. We'll actually see this package again later. After this, we get a little package of Jarrett and Universal Studios speaking to his subject as they chant King over and over again. What were y'all's thoughts on the package and the little Jarrett segment there? Jake, what'd you think of that?
It was just, you know, typical Jarrett stuff. It's just odd to me. Like, just everything about his whole, the way he's presented is just so strange to me, with his magician outfit and all this stuff and his weird music and these weird video packages. It's just very odd. I mainly focused during all this hype stuff is that there was somebody behind Don West and Tanae that had like a Juggalo sign behind them the whole time. And that's all. And also, Don, I almost thought, like, is that what they called it? Because I'm pretty sure he called it a pay-per-view at one point. Yeah. I was like, is that just, like, their catchy name? Yeah. I was like, is that what they mean to call? Like, is that what they call it? Because it's a weekly pay-per-view, like, some weird name. But or maybe he's just screwed up. I don't know.
No, he he just flubbed out. Matt, what did you think of this, the match announcements and the package?
The package was fine. Typical stuff you see from Jarrett. And obviously the match announcements we'll get into later on.
Ben, what'd you think of these few little segments?
So the whole Jarrett thing's just weird. He's just looking like a great value opera conductor. It's just like, what, stop it. And Wes and Tanae, if Loving You was playing in the background, you wouldn't be surprised, because they are doing some proper, like, cooey eyes at each other during that pay-per-view rundown. It's like, boys, get a room, please. And like Matt says, we'll get into my thoughts and feelings about the matches when we get there.
I think Don West gets a little worked up, gets a little horny when he goes through a hype packet or a little hype segment like that. So
reminds him of the old days.
Wetting his ass off in those like silk suits he's got on. He always looks so hot, like he's
looking like a bouncer at a Jersey, like, nightclub.
He's the forefather of staying high. Mojo Rawley learned everything from Don West.
Yeah, he's always wearing his metallic shirts with his matching metallic ties. So. Yeah.
Speaking of stroke, he looks like he's on the verge.
Yeah, he could undo that top button, couldn't he?
Yeah, he needs to show a little chest meat like Abyss did. So.
Well, he didn't want to be one upped. I don't blame him.
All right. So after all this, Eric Young and Scott D'Amore come out, followed by Truth and Three Live Crew. And our next match is going to be the main event for this week's Impact. It's going to be Ron the Truth Killings versus Eric Young. Young jumps Truth as soon as the bell rings. Dusty's joined the commentary team at some point during the commercial or while they were starting to fight. D'Amore trips up Truth with a hockey stick, which prompts Jerry Lynn to come out and chase him away. So Scott D'Amore's already away from ringside a little bit into the match, so we can let these guys kind of do their thing instead of having a bunch of interference. Dusty is talking about how much of a disappointment Jeff Jarrett is to the NWA World Title, and refers to him as a hemorrhoid. At some point, Dusty just goes off in an unintelligible rant, and I made the comment of which one was harder to understand, Don West or Dusty. I'm going to go with Dusty on that one, but Jake may disagree with me. Truth dominates most of this match and eventually wins with the axe kick. Jarrett then comes out after the match and is talking trash to Truth and eventually makes his way over to the commentary table where he absolutely crushes Dusty over the head with the guitar. He then starts assaulting Truth with the, you know, the kind of part where you put your fingers on the guitar. He starts bashing him in the gut and in the back with that, until BG James and Conan come out to make the save. After this, Russo comes out and tells Jarrett that he is completely out of line and that he has every right to suspend him and take away the championship. He then says that the guitar is banned, and if he uses it at the pay-per-view during the match, it will be an immediate disqualification, and the title will change hands. Ben, what did you think of all this stuff after the match, plus the match itself?
So the match itself, I thought, was a really good little match. So, you know, I mean, Young and Truth put on a really good little match. I think I went 2.25 for it. Two stars. I'm an unapologetic lover of Dusty on commentary. He brings everything up a level. I also like the fact that he didn't really go on about the old days too much. He was trying to concentrate on the product that was in front of him, even when Tanay tried to take him that way. He was like, no, I'm here to talk about Truth and Jarrett. The beatdown after the match, so the guitar shot's fine, but let's give Truth a little something to work with. You know, he doesn't need to take a full on beating like he did.
Yeah, well, the problem that bothered me about it is, you know, James and Conan come out to make the save, but somehow they disappear again.
Yeah.
And after Russo makes the announcement, Truth guys tries to go jump him again, and Jarrett just kicks his ass again. So I don't know where James and Conan went that whole time. But
as well, the fact that Jarrett still got his opera conductor outfit on, you know, I'll never take him seriously wearing that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Jake, what do you think of all this?
Yeah, the match itself was pretty basic. I want to start at a half. To me, it was almost like an extended squash kind of thing, just to give Truth a little bit of boost before going into the pay-per-view for his battle match, and kind of show off his finisher with the lie detector, which is a fun name for his finisher. I kind of got Jarrett hitting Dusty with the guitar because it just kind of gets him over as an asshole or whatever. But I agree with y'all. Maybe let Truth get a little bit of, you know, not just constantly getting his ass kicked. I mean, it all just depends. I mean, it's knowing where we go with it, I guess, is the issue. It's like one thing if he's just constantly getting his ass kicked. It's all about the payoff. And it's kind of like, I'll get to in a second, about this whole show. I kind of wish you would have got a little bit more. In theory, I like the Jarrett beatdown, but I agree with y'all that I think Truth should have got a little bit of his heat back and showed a little bit a fight and not just constantly be getting beat down. So, and I guess the stipulation makes sense. I guess it just adds something to the match in theory.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, I really think Eric Young kind of stood out in this match. I feel like his selling is really good, and he was able to show that off pretty good in this match. But Matt, what do you think of this one?
Yeah, like Jake said, the match was fairly basic. I went a star and a half, star and a half on it too. It was basically just an extended squash. And I thought the post-match was fine up until a point. Like, I like Jarrett just clocking Dusty with the guitar. That guitar shot was disgusting. And knowing what I know about TNA and how their main event matches go, as soon as they announced that guitar stipulation, I could tell you that the main event of the pay-per-view was going to be a gigantic shit show, which we'll get into later on in this podcast. It was at that moment I was like, oh, fuck, here we go. This is going to be a gigantic fucking nightmare. And we'll see if that comes true later on. But yeah, star and a half for the match and the post-match stuff.
I got you. Yeah, I would go probably 2 stars on this. I thought it was a pretty solid main event. It was kind of paint my numbers, but, you know, like I said, I thought Young kind of stood out with his selling, and, you know, truth is always a good time watching. Matt, I'll just stick with you. What did you think of this overall episode, and what would have been your score rating out of 10?
Pretty standard episode, like nothing actively bad, but nothing actively great either. I ended up going 5 out of 10.
Gotcha. Jake, what'd you think of this episode and what was your score rating?
Yeah, I'm a lockstep with Matt on this one. It's basically sort of a holdover episode, which to me, for, you know, an hour of wrestling TV, is not the worst thing in the world. Like, to me, if your TV, your weekly TV is 5 out of 10, that's not horrible. If you pay it off, because I felt like the point of this is we didn't get anything spectacular, but it kind of reminded us of everything we're supposed to see on the pay-per-view, gave a little bit of extra juice to, you know, the fuse that we're seeing. So in theory, a 5 out of 10 is, to me, it's fine for your TV show if whatever you're building to pays it off, which we'll get to soon enough. But so I was fine with it. Like Matt said, it's like I would 5 out of 10, just a kind of a holdover episode, feature the guys that you want to remind everybody about, just kind of establish the feuds, remind everybody what's going on, let the X Division guys come and do their stuff. And yeah, it was a decent episode.
Yep.
Gotcha. Ben, what'd you think?
I went 5.5 out of 10. There's nothing actively bad on there, but there's nothing great on here either. So if you wanted to miss it, you could, but it, you feel like it's not an hour of your life wasted. Like Jacob said, they do a really good job, I think, of previewing what's to come on Wednesday night. They've just got to pay it off, and we'll get to whether they pay it off in a bit.
Looking forward to it. but yeah, I agree with all y'all's points. I'd probably go 5 out of 10 as well. It was just kind of a paint my numbers episode as a whole.
Sorry, Luke, just what I want to mention quick, because I noticed it when I was reviewing it. When we got to the AJ match, the fact that there was still 20 minutes of the show to go and we were on match number 4. I mean, in an hour show to get 5 matches. And, you know, apart from the Abyss match, the other 4 are all touching on things that are happening on the Wednesday night. Like I say, I thought that was a really good effort.
Yeah. I mean, this was pretty action-packed. And I think Lewis kind of complained about there being no backstage segments last week. There wasn't a single backstage segment, and they went straight from, you know, I mean, they showed a couple packages, but they went match to match, match to match to match. So
it's the Nitro formula.
Yeah.
they didn't need backstage segments. Like you said, you got the matches and the video packages. There was no need for anything backstage.
Yeah, I mean, as long as the matches bring it and aren't actively bad, then I'm totally okay with the kind of nonstop action, to use another pun. I enjoyed this episode, but it was more of just kind of a prelude to the pay-per-view itself. All right, so we have just covered the Impact episode number 3, and we're going to take a little break real quick, and we'll be back on the other side. Place to Be Nation, welcome back to the second half of our episode of Highway to the Impact Zone. In the first half, we covered Impact episode number 3, and now we will be covering the second anniversary show, pay-per-view number 100, in this second half. We open this pay-per-view with a recap of last week's pay-per-view, where Jarrett bashed Russo in the head with a guitar. We also got where Watts accepted Goldilocks' challenge. The Naturals attacked AMW and stole their gear, and Gilberti and Swinger after their humiliation match in their humiliation outfits. We also get a recap of Jarrett hitting Dusty with the guitar and Russo telling him that if he uses it at the pay-per-view, he will also lose the title. After this, Tenay welcomes us into the Asylum and gives us a rundown of tonight's title matches, as well as letting us know that our opening contest will be for the NWA Tag Team titles. Our NWA Tag Team title match is going to be Team Japan of Miyamoto and Nasawa versus America's Most Wanted. We get our usual bullet points for our title matches. The bullet points are AMW's back on top. Obviously talking about how they've won the titles and are kind of back on top of the tag division. The second one is a natural distraction, talking about how the Naturals have kind of been the little annoying gnat around AMW for the last couple of weeks. And then the last one is experience versus unfamiliarity. There's basically just talking about how AMW is kind of unfamiliar with these two Japanese competitors. They show a seating section of NWA legends that includes Harley Race, Sarah Lee, Corsica Joe, Mickey Doyle, Larry Zbyszko, and an empty seat where Dusty Rhodes is supposed to be sitting. Obviously selling the injuries that he took on Impact later or earlier in the week. The refs tonight are wearing the old school kind of button-up shirts with the bow ties. I thought that was a nice little touch. Miyamoto and Storm lock up and stall to open the contest. Storm eventually tags in Harris, and the action picks up as Harris kind of unloads with some heavy strikes, which makes Miyamoto tag out to Nasawa. Nasawa comes in with the quick strikes of his own, and then on Harris and Storm before Storm uses his power to take back over. Tanay and Wes inform us that TNA officials will not clear Kid Cash for tonight's match against AJ Styles, so AJ Styles will be facing a mystery opponent. Cheating and illegal double teaming allow Team Japan to kind of take back over in the match. Nasawa and Miyamoto work over Storm's arm before Storm gets the hot tag to Harris, and this is where all hell breaks loose and all four men are in the ring. After a bit of chaos, we finally see AMW hit their finisher, the death sentence, for the win. After the match, the Naturals obviously come out and assault AMW and cover their faces with lipstick and like some powder makeup. I'm really glad AMW finally hit their tag team finisher because it's actually pretty cool. Jake, what'd you think of this one?
Yeah, the finisher was really good. I thought it was like a good, solid title defense for AMW, because obviously this is a little bit of a holdover, because they're continuing to put them against the Naturals, which seems like that's going to be the real feud, and this was kind of just something to have them out there and doing something. Nasala's kicks to me, like a lot of his offense looked kind of soft and like he wasn't really connecting with them, so that wasn't too great. It was okay. I thought this match could have, I guess it wasn't bad. It's just disappointing to me. Like, I went 2 stars on it. It kind of almost seemed like a match you would see on Impact. Like, it wasn't quite up to what I would think. Like, I almost wish you would have got a few extra minutes and they could have built to something a little bit more. Because as it stood, it kind of just felt like it was something for AMW to go in there and get a win, which is fine. But I guess for this show and how much they've hyped it as being a big show, I almost wish they would have. Like, I wasn't expecting some 5-star classic, but maybe something a little bit better. It felt a little bit too, I don't know, I feel like I wanted more from it. But I did like the finisher, like you said. It looked pretty sweet with the kind of double team, like the top rope leg drop sort of thing was cool. So it was fine, but I kind of expected more, I guess.
Yeah, and I also love how the commentary pointed out that we haven't seen this move in forever. So it if they have to point it out, then you know it's been a long time since they've actually hit it. Matt, what do you think of this match?
Yeah, kind of on the same page as Jake. Nasao and Miyamoto's offense, I thought wasn't exactly interesting. It was very punchy and kicky, which didn't make for a exciting watch. And like you said, the death sentence is a great move, and they hit it really well. Like, they were spot on with it. And you know, for an anniversary show, I was kind of surprised that they didn't just do AMW versus the Naturals here. Like, if you're pimping this as a big show, why not have the big tag title match? So I thought that was kind of weird. And it was a match where like, the result was never in doubt. You knew AMW was going to retain the tag titles, so that kind of took me out of it a little bit too. And so I ended up going a star and a half on this overall.
Yeah. I got you. I think this could have been better off being like the big match on Impact, and maybe throw like the little clusterfuck six-way exhibition match here. But yeah, I kind of agree that this was kind of misplaced. But Ben, what'd you think?
I thought it was a good basic paint by numbers tag match. Great value, Muta and Japanese Jared Leto. They were quite impressive. But yeah, like Matt said, the result was never in doubt. The death sentence is a great move. They should use that more often. I like the fact, like you say, that they pointed out in commentary that it was the first time they'd used it in ages. And yeah, you know, if you're not going to do the Naturals match here, then go with this, because you know, you want to put your biggest stars out there, and AMW are one of TNA's biggest stars.
Yeah, they're definitely pushing them as a top tag team, and they continue to impress. After this, we go back to Scott Hudson with Kid Cash in Dallas. Hudson asks how Cash feels about getting pulled from his title match. Cash says he's been working his entire career through injuries for all 15 years that he's been wrestling. He's been working through injuries. Said he doesn't need the NWA to protect him, because that's what he has Dallas for if he needs it. He tells AJ to shine his belt up real nice, because he's coming for it as soon as he gets healthy. We then go to our first cryptic video of the night, teasing who AJ Styles' opponent is. It flashes up the date of June 23rd, 2074. And we hear a voice that talks real robotically that tells us we'll see who it is later tonight. After this, we get a little hype. We get the same hype package for the stretcher match between Desire and Trinity. Jake, what'd you think of the interview and the kind of cryptic video?
Okay, so the interview was pretty standard heel stuff from Kid Cash. I thought he was pretty good. I mean, he's annoying, and it just reminds you that he's just make sure that we don't forget about him and AJ, even though they aren't going against each other tonight, and make sure we don't forget, and just gives him a chance to, since he's not going to be in a match, just gives him a little bit of screen time. So that was fine. This vignette thing, obviously very odd. Like, who's the old guy? What is the future? Why does it sound like Stephen Hawking? What, they said something about clues. I don't know what the clues are. I think they said something like, this is the second clue. And so I was just trying to figure, like, it obviously seemed like, I actually didn't even know that it was supposed to be about who AJ was facing at first. I thought they were just like hyping up somebody that was debuting or something. So I was just, it was baffling, which I guess was the point. Or maybe.
the mystery opponent is really a mystery.
Ben, what do you think of this one?
So I didn't think much of the hype package. Like Jacob said, I wasn't even really paying attention. It was just like, oh, there's some old guy on the screen. Something might be happening here. I better be watching this towards the end. But at the beginning, I'll be honest, I didn't even pay attention to it.
it was definitely really weird. Matt, what?
I thought the Cash in Dallas interview was good, though. I thought, you know, Dallas does play that redneck Jerry Springer audience member quite well.
Matt, what'd you think of the interview and kind of the cryptic video?
Yeah, that cryptic video sure was something, wasn't it? that's pretty much my only note on that thing. But And as far as the Dallas and Government Cheese Kid Rock vignette was solid enough.
Part of the crypto video was like, I will give you clue number two, like yeah, the anniversary of two for TNA.
Where the hell was clue number one?
Yeah, I don't know. Because I think they meant to show this one later, and then they showed the exact same one over again as later on. I mean, it's the exact same one, but it's supposed to be completely different because it's supposed to be like four different clues throughout the night, even though the last one
all makes sense.
Yeah. It's like Memento. You got to watch it backwards to really understand.
It's like there was a game show over here in the 80s called 3-2-1, and they did something very similar, like, you know, these totally random clues and riddles that had no connection at all, and you had like, oh, that's the one that's going to win me the car. No, just tell me.
I think you have to be on painkillers to understand it, actually. I think that's the...
You have to have intaken a copious amount of drugs and alcohol to be able to.
You have to be. You have to be charismatic and enigmatic.
Take some peyote in the desert; you'll get all the answers.
All right. Well, after this, we get the stretcher match between Trinity and Desire. Desire comes out looking like she just dropped the kids off at preschool, headed to the Pilates class. Trinity jumps Desire before the bell. All of Trinity's offense is directed towards Desire's back that had previously been broken, as we've been told now three times in a hype package. While Desire uses a lot of heavy strikes and really just kind of beats the shit out of Trinity for most of the match with a lot of kicks and punches, Desire hits Trinity with a nasty suplex on the stage. After Trinity gets thrown on the stretcher for just a little bit, she rolls off and eventually throws a chair at Desire's face and really kind of brutally hits her right on the corner of the head. After this, Desire kind of takes back over after this, and she rams Trinity into the guardrail twice. And the second one, she kind of rammed her head into it, and it was really it made a really nasty sound. They then brawl into the crowd where Trinity hits a spear and then begins to set up a table. Trinity then climbs up the stairs onto a balcony and misses a leg drop as she tries to go off of the balcony through the table onto Desire, but Desire rolls away. Desire then puts Trinity onto the stretcher and starts rolling her towards the ambulance outside. And as soon as she gets her to the ambulance, she goes to open the door, and somebody from the inside opens the door and completely knocks Desire out. And this person ends up being Big Vito, who apparently is a family member of Trinity. he emerges from the ambulance and knocks Desire out cold, and they put Desire on the stretcher. And it takes them forever to get her into the ambulance, but Trinity wins the match after they shut the doors. Matt, what'd you think of this stretcher match?
So I mentioned in our group chat that we have that this was one of the matches where I kind of struggled on what to rate it, because like I liked what they did in it. It felt like a fight, which is what it should have been. And like, I really enjoyed what they did where they just like were throwing punches and throwing chairs at each other, and that balcony dive that Trinity does, landing ass first through the table. I thought that was a really good spot, but I think the stipulation of it being a stretcher match actually hurt it a little bit. Like, I think this would have been better if it was just like a regular street fight or an ODQ match. It kind of had like a last man standing feel to it, where like you have these security guards just, you know, they get knocked down from a punch and they're picking one of them up, throwing them on the stretcher and trying to reel them off. Like, it's just, so it kills the flow of the match. So like, I liked the work, but I hated the stipulation. So I'm probably still overrating the hell out of this. I ended up going 3 stars with it. Like, I enjoyed it that much, but I just think it would have been better off if it was just like a regular street fight.
we can't trust the broads to put the other one on the stretcher. We need these lads to do it for us.
The black shirts.
Oh, Ben, what do you think of this one?
So I went 2 stars. I thought it was a really good, hard-hitting match. You know, there weren't many punches pulled. They really went for it. My enjoyment of the match was tempered by the guy on the front row by the stretcher with his desire sign, though. He creeped me the fuck out. And I was spending most of my time trying to read his sign, but he was just weird. He pops up again later in the show. You'll see him on the front row. But yeah, 2 stars. I didn't like the commentators telegraphing the ending of the match, though. It was like, oh yeah, Desire's going to win now. All she's going to do is open the door. Oh, is there going to be somebody behind the door? Oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, that guy in the front row was wearing like one of those like see-through poker caps that people wear at poker games.
Yeah, he had the poker cap. He had the mullet, and the creepiest smile I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, he was definitely a cretin in the asylum. Jake, before I get your comments, they called them the Black Shirts because there used to be a tag team called Red Shirt Security. So that's why they kept referring to them as the Black Shirts. But what were your thoughts, Jake?
Yeah, and I feel like that's a WCW kind of thing because it wasn't WCW. They were the Gray Shirts maybe or something, I feel like, with all oh God, I can't think of his name right now. Anyway,
I know.
Yeah, this match. Yeah. So, like you said, Logan Desire, she has like yoga pants on with like like this tank top. So, just another odd fashion choice. Like maybe could have had a little bit more gear. Trinity is kind of doing like the Lita look, I guess, which I feel like works a little bit better. The first time when the security guard started putting him on the stretcher, I was like, what the hell is happening? Why is this? Because, you know, normally I feel like in a stretcher match, you put your opponent on the stretcher and do it, that sort of thing. But it was like Matt said, anytime they would hit like the most basic move, these guys just run in with their stoic faces, loading them on the gurney. It was so absurd. I like could not get over it. Like every 5 seconds they're just running in, like they're just waiting to run in there. And it really did hurt the match a little bit. I did like what said, the intensity of it. I did feel like maybe they could have stepped it up a little bit, and I do feel like it was a little bit too long for what it was. Like I feel like when they were setting up the table, trying to work to the table spot, it kind of got a little plodding because you know, she was trying to sell a little bit too much to let the table get set up. And also the table spot, I like the idea of it, but I think it was just the way they shot it didn't look great. Because the way they shot it, you couldn't see the moment whenever Desire moves off the table, right? It was So you couldn't really see it. So it almost looks like Trinity's just jumping onto the table. Like it made it seem like Desire had moved like way before she jumped, and she just jumped into the table. Like, which I don't think it was maybe their fault. I think it's just it was not shot well, which kind of sucks because it was the biggest spot of the match. And then they go out to this parking lot, and I love that it was not even like a real parking lot. Like it was like cars parked in the grass. Like it looked like when you go to the fair in the South. And, like people just park in the grass. It was, you could see like the interstate in the background. It was just so, it just looked funny to me. Like it was just very like, I don't know. It was very TNA. And then Vito jumping out, and then he's like scolding Trinity, like telling her to get out the goddamn way and stuff. It was an entertaining just kind of shit show. So I kind of enjoyed it. So I went 2 stars. I couldn't justify going higher than that, but it was fun. I'm not mad about it. It was a fun kind of clusterfuck. It was, yeah. So,
yeah, Desire definitely just came straight from an aerobics class, but the damn black shirts. I'm kind of with Matt. I might go a little lower, might go 2.5, but I really enjoyed the kind of physicalness of this. I really think Desire just really kind of kicked the shit out of Trinity for most of the match, and you know, Trinity hit her underhanded moves here and there, but yeah, I think it may, like Jake said, I think it might have gone just a tad bit too long, but I enjoyed this, and I honestly kind of am surprisingly thinking this might have been the best match we've seen so far. But yeah, I think I'd go around the 2.5 range on this one. After this, we go back to Scott Hudson, who's in Vince Russo's office. Russo reiterates that if the guitar is used, and a DQ will happen on the spot, and that the title will change hands. He also says he cannot comment on who AJ Styles' opponent is later, which was just total bullshit. But, you know, I understand that they're trying to, you know, kind of tease it. And I had a question for all of y'all. When is a DQ not immediate? Are all DQs not immediate? He keeps reiterating that, like, as soon as the guitar hit happens, it'll be a DQ. Would it not the always famous, be
the famous delayed disqualification?
I'm thinking about it. 5 seconds later. Well, the way they worded it on Impact, I thought it was like, as soon as, like, somebody saw the guitar, that's it, you know?
Yeah, I guess maybe that's what he was going
for. Yeah, that's how I kind of took it, too, but...
Yeah, I guess
it's like, TNA, and, so who the hell knows?
And like Matt said in the Impact part, you know, you knew that the guitar was going to be the difference maker in the match. And at the time, I was pretty sure it was Russo who was going to be throwing it.
Yeah. It kind of acted like they were kind of teasing that somebody was going to, you know, kind of give it to Jarrett at some point and screw over Killings. But we'll get to that when we get to that.
He had that Nokia track phone strapped
to his belt too. I noticed that too. Yeah, he had it strapped to his belt. He looked real cool.
can he get a suit? Like, he's director of authority, and he comes in these, like, can he get a...
He has a short like, suit.
Yeah, come on, man. Like,
looking like he runs director of authority. Looking like he runs a self-storage place.
Yeah. Put a sport coat on. This is the NWA, man. Come on.
It's the anniversary show, man.
Yeah.
Put some effort into it.
He's like the most low-rent mobster you could ever get.
He cleans up afterwards.
Yeah.
What's the old saying? Dress up for the job you want, not the job you have, and all that.
And he still looks creepy as shit with those stupid sideburns, but...
Yeah, I hate him clean shaven.
Yeah, he definitely needs the beard back. He looks real weird. All right, so like I said earlier, we actually get the exact same cryptic video right here after the Russo interview. I think they meant to play this one this time and another one the first time, but we get the exact same one we got about 15 minutes ago. But after that, we get a hype package for the Jerry Lynn Scott D'Amore match. It kind of intersperses a little interview with D'Amore, and D'Amore said he had a choice between being the Prime Minister of Canada or coming to TNA, and he chose TNA. He also refers to himself as the greatest X Division wrestler of all time. So, yeah, our next match is Jerry Lynn versus Scott D'Amore. At the very beginning of the match, Lynn comes charging out to try and start beating the shit out of D'Amore, but is held back by the ref pretty quickly. D'Amore is standing outside, and he wants the ref to count him out so he doesn't actually have to fight. And then once he finally gets in, he actually pushes the ref to try and get himself disqualified. I made the note that at one point the camera does a close-in shot on D'Amore's face, and he kind of looks like Al Borland from Home Improvement. This match is completely worked around how Jerry Lynn is trying to go for the cradle pile driver because he really wants to just brutalize D'Amore with that, and D'Amore kind of just uses his stalling and kind of underhanded tactics to get some offense in. D'Amore in this match gets entirely too much offense. I don't even really get what they were going for, but I mean, with what he got, he actually looked pretty impressive. But I really think this kind of should have been more of a really direct squash. I think Lynn should have kind of beaten him in like 2 or 3 minutes. At some point, DeMar hits a top rope clothesline, showing off his X Division prowess. The commentary really, really harps on the fact of how fat Scott DeMar is the whole match. Like, Lynn is struggling to lift him because he's such a lard ass. and then they really point this out when DeMar hits a moonsault from the top rope. I think Don West even says, "That's like getting hit by an 1,000-pound weight." They're really, really harping on that. At some point, DeMar goes out and finds the hockey stick, and the ref gets taken down. So Lynn uses the stick first to hit like a Russian leg sweep with it around DeMar's neck, and actually goes for the cover, but the ref is still down. Lynn then goes to wake the ref up, and DeMar cracks Lynn over the back with the hockey stick, and DeMar goes for the cover and gets like a super long two count. It was as close to a three as you could get. DeMar then goes for his finishing move that's called the demoralizer. And after a series of reversals, Lynn finally hits the cradle pile driver to pick up the victory. Members of Team Canada then come out one by one, which I thought was really stupid. Why did everybody not come out at once and just brutalize everybody? But this all ends with Christopher Daniels making his return, and he kind of fends off the Team Canada members as they retreat to the back. Ben, what did you think of this match and post-match a little brawl?
I have so many problems with this, Logan. like you say, this should have been Squash City, shouldn't it? 2-3 minutes. Not like this competitive little match that was 10 minutes long. So I have a problem with the match itself and the storyline that surrounds it. So indulge me a second, gentlemen. Last week, did they even mention this match at all? That this match was coming on on the program last week? I don't think they did.
They did not.
So we've had to sit through on every show a 6-man tag of some variety, yeah? So why have we not had Jerry Lynn running the gauntlet to get to DeMar? That's what should have happened. Let's build the match properly, not just throw it out in a 10-minute throwaway segment. And like I said, I've got major issues with the match itself. You know, it should have been, you know, 3 or 4 cradle pile drivers. DeMar's dead. Not let's turn it into fucking Hulk versus Andre 2004 with, you know, Jerry Lynn not being able to cradle pile drive Jerry Lynn. Good God, that can't happen. and the beat down after is shit as well, because like you say, why are they coming out one by one by one? You could have had the same thing with Christopher Daniels at the end, you know, with everybody coming out at once. Why is Team Canada not even out there during the match? Scott DeMar is a character I don't think has told him to stay in the back. We all know that about him. I went 1 star. It was awful. I know Jerry Lynn's like this godlike figure on the internet. I could quite happily score this 1 star. I was bored rigid with this. It was wrong on so many. It was wrong on so many levels.
And I even forgot to mention the cradle pile driver Blynn hits. It like just he drops DeMar like directly on his neck and head, and it looks like he really almost kind of really injured him.
Like it was the whole thing of it was like Hulk and Andre with the body slam. It's like, I'm pretty sure even though he's a big lad, he can game up for a pile driver. You know, I'm in disbelief going.
Matt, what do you think of this one?
In the words of our friend Tim Capel, what are we doing? Ben, you were being way too kind. You thought this went 10 minutes. This fucker went over 15.
Yeah. Did it really? Good
yes.
God.
Yeah.
Just DeMar being able to go tit for tat with Jerry Lynn is asinine. Like, I get that DeMar is a former wrestler turned manager, but come the fuck on. 15 minutes. And you've booked D'Amore as a chicken shit coward through this whole feud. And then you have a 10-minute stretch where he's destroying Jerry Lynn. Makes zero sense. And, like, if it was like a 5-minute match, I thought the beginning was good, and I kind of liked the ending with, you know, the hockey stick shot that D'Amore hits Lynn with till the end. I thought it was actually halfway decent. Like, if you had just compressed the match down to like 5 or 6 minutes, I think it would have been better off. But as is, this thing was horrible. I gave this thing a star. Just because I like Jerry Lynn, I could have gone lower than a star, quite frankly. It went 15 minutes, it felt like 50.
They tried to make D'Amore like the second coming of Malenko and Guerrero combined, didn't they? And it was like, no, he's like you say, he's a chicken shit. He's not going to do that.
Longest match of the night, Jerry Lynn versus Scott D'Amore.
Yeah, it ended up going 15-20. That was the final.
Good God. I've been bloody generous for 10 minutes.
All right, so Jake, what'd you think of this one?
Well, I don't know. I think don't you guys remember in the 80s when Bobby Heenan was playing the heel manager role, and when the faces finally got a hold of him, they had a 15-minute match where Bobby Heenan whipped their ass every... No, wait, that's not what they did. This is stupid. So I just don't like, this is so baffling. I was trying to figure out like, what were they thinking? Like, I guess they thought this was like creative, like, oh, look, it's like, I didn't even think of the Russo thing, but like that it's a swerve, like, oh, look, you think he's going to suck and he doesn't, but it's just not satisfying. It was plotting. I would argue that D'Amore doesn't look good. I think the only thing that maybe makes him look decent is that Jerry Lynn is selling his ass off for some reason for this guy. Yep, like he's dying for all this, that. Like, terrible soft offense that he's doing. Like, it almost wasn't even really competitive, and that Jerry Lynn pretty much got dominated. I don't even, like, besides a few spots, he's just getting dominated, and it's like Scott D'Amore's not even cheating. Like, he's just whipping his ass. It's such a simple angle that I just don't know what they were thinking with this. It's just, you have him come in, he's a heel. You know, if you want to have him have a little few cheating spots where, you know, just to build a little bit of heat, but you got to have, and I didn't feel like Jerry Lynn had enough fire coming out. Like, he should be pissed off when he wants to beat up this fat guy. Like, you know, like, it was just plotty and terrible, just so painfully long. Like, and then, I did not get it. I don't know what they were thinking. I feel like they thought this was creative, maybe like not what you would expect, but sometimes that doesn't make things better. It makes them much worse. I went dud on this. I went zero. It was so long. It was just so long. And it made no sense to me. I don't understand it. It makes Jerry Lynn look like crap.
You knew you were going to be in for a long night when they did that bit right at the beginning of the match where, like, Lynn runs down to ringside and then just stops in the ring. It's like, what's he doing? He should be going out to the outside to beat the shit out of him, not just standing there like an idiot.
And another thing. Go ahead.
No, it killed the pace of the show, too. I feel like the show in general had some pacing issues, but just kind of because it's right in the middle of the show, and I feel like it just made the whole thing just slam into a brick wall. Like, yeah, sorry, Matt, what you got?
It was worked like a house show match that you would have seen like near the opening card at Madison Square Garden in the 80s, when it should have been worked more like the Trinity versus Desire stretcher match that happened 20 minutes earlier.
I mean, at this stage, D'Amore's got nothing to do with the booking, has he? So, I mean, I still get why you came up with it as a good idea.
Yeah, you got me. I mean,
I was literally about to say the MSG house show thing, so I'm glad somebody else picked up on that.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, like Jacob said, it should have just been like a weasel suit match or something like that.
Yeah, this definitely shouldn't have been more than maybe 3 or 4, maybe even 5 minutes. I'll give them 5 minutes, but yeah, this really should have been Lynn just really beating the shit out of D'Amore, and maybe like one of y'all said, hit like 2 or 3 pile drivers instead of just one.
Yeah,
because I mean,
And to what Ben said earlier, you know, have him go through the ringer against the Team Canada guys. Have him have a match here with Bobby Roode, and that goes 10 minutes. And then if Jerry Lynn beats Bobby Roode or Petey Williams, he gets 5 minutes with Scott D'Amore. Something like that.
We've had all these sort of, you know, interchangeable six-man tags. Surely we could, you know, have done the whole gauntlet match thing there. Or, like you say, you could have gone PT, you know, gone through them in order until you got to the big boss.
Yeah, I was going to say, we've seen how shitty it can be, a gauntlet match can be worked. But I think if you put the Team Canada guys in there with Lynn, I think they could probably get three little, three quick five-minute matches between the four of them.
You know. And
it's an easy 20-25 minute match, isn't it, that?
Yeah.
And he's super over as a heel, too. So I feel like if they would have done that, the crowd would have lost their shit, you know? And instead, the crowd is kind of like, doesn't really know what to think.
Yeah.
And it kills the crowd for a bit, too, honestly.
Yeah.
It takes a while for the crowd to bounce back.
Yeah, it really
does. Between this and the next match, yeah.
I don't even know that it was really that I was impressed by D'Amore, but it was just more that I was so shocked that they gave him so much offense that I was like, you know, if they're going to put him over like the leader of the X division or the veteran of the X division, fuck, give D'Amore the title and let him be the best X division wrestler like he says he was.
And not to go forward too much, but it doesn't lead anywhere with D'Amore either. He goes back to being the manager, doesn't he? There's no follow-up after this.
Yeah,
as far as I can recall.
Yeah. No, I don't think he wrestles much more, if at all, again. But I do think D'Amore always kind of had. I don't think he was super involved with the backstage stuff, but I think he was always kind of involved from the beginning. I think he was kind of a right hand man of the Jarretts, so I think he was somewhat involved. But I don't think he has the job he has nowadays, obviously. But after all the Team Canada stuff, we go back to Scott D'Amore with the New York connection of Swinger and Gilberti, and he basically just uses this to make fun of their outfits that they still have on from last week. David Young comes in at some point and says he'll help Gilberti and Swinger out if they can help him. Young tells Glenn to challenge Siaki and Kenny to a double or nothing match. Gilberti loves that idea and tells Young that he'll help him out and tell him how to become a winner like he and Swinger. After this, we get our third cryptic video and says basically nothing again and tells us that there will be one final clue. Jake, what did you think of this video, or the cryptic video and the New York connection interview?
Yeah, like was said, I couldn't even really tell it was a different one than earlier. I thought it was just the same thing again. And the little backstage segment I thought was kind of lame. I don't know. It was very weird because Swinger just kept like getting in the camera and like flexing his tits constantly. And I didn't know what was going on. Like he just kept trying to get in front of the camera, which was odd. But it's just kind of, I mean, I got why they did it the other time, but I don't think it's like him dressed as a leprechaun, you know, Gilberti dressed as a leprechaun, all this. I don't think it's something we need to like drag out. It's not that good to, you know, we don't need to make it a long-term angle, you know, just let it die.
Oh, but if they lose next week, we get to see it for 60 days instead of 30, so.
Yeah, who cares?
Great.
The potential is endless.
Ben, what'd you think of this interview?
I had no problem with the interview. It was just a nice, basic interview. The pecs flexing was a bit off-putting, I'll be honest. I was paying attention to the cryptic clues by this stage, but I still wasn't really getting them, so I kind of knew it was going to be a big deal, and obviously they mentioned on commentary it was all to do with AJ's opponent, so I was like, all right, so who's coming in sort of thing.
Yeah, I rewound the cryptic video, this one, like two or three times to like try and write down what it said, but it was just so... you know, like it was so lame and just plain, and he didn't even really say anything other than the fact that there's going to be a final clue. But
imagining Logan.
There's a car
like on the Christmas store. You're like Ralphie on a Christmas story with the Ovaltine thing, trying to crack the code.
Yeah, I really wanted to go back and try to write down what it said, but it was just so, like, he said, like, four or five sentences and said nothing at the same time. Matt, what do you think of the interview in the cryptic video?
Well, everything the New York connection touches turns to complete and utter dog shit, so that was pretty bad. And as far as the cryptic video, it the production on it is not great, which I know, shocker, TNA having bad production, but it felt like what a film student tries to put off as like his version of Blade Runner or his version of The Matrix. Like, it's completely nonsensical. There's a whole lot of green, and it just makes no sense. Like, is this supposed to get me excited for AJ's opponent? Who's AJ gonna face? Neo? Trinity? What the hell's going on here? But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if he said anything of worth and actually said any type of clue, I think these cryptic videos would have been cool, but he just says words that don't mean anything. But after the third cryptic video, we get our minis match between Mini Piroth and Masquerita Sagrada. To start off the match, Sagrada steals Piroth's jacket and starts doing kind of the bullfighting gimmick where he gets him to run through it and pulls it up. And then he does the little thing where he sticks it between his legs and kind of rubs it on his gooch. The kind of between the leg thing that you do with a towel sometimes. But after that, I made the comment that Piroth looks like he kind of raided Del Wilkes' closet. He kind of looks like the Patriot. after that, Piroth taunts Sagrada's shortness, and Sagrada has to kind of use some underhanded tactics by stepping on his toes and his fingers to kind of get him down to his size. Piroth uses his size and power to kind of dominate most of the match. Piroth does this grunt the whole time that he's on offense, and it is the most annoying thing I've ever heard. He just sounds like Henry Godwin calling for the pigs. Eventually, Sagrada uses his quickness to take advantage, and he scores the win with a victory roll. After the pin, David Young comes out and attacks the minis until D-Ray tries to come out and make the save. However, he's unsuccessful. And after this, the minis come in and start biting David Young on the ass. this is where we've come to, guys.
Oh, wait, it gets better.
Oh, yeah, it only gets better. My boy Mike Posey gets pushed down by Young, only to come back up and hit a glorious, glorious drop kick. So Posey might be getting back in my good graces. D-Ray, Sagrada, and Piroth then cover Young, and Posey does a fast count. So this gives David Young, two, according to Don West, only two more losses because the minis only count as half a loss apiece.
Jesus God Almighty.
since I can tell you enjoyed it so much, Matt, what do you think of this one?
Well, the match itself, I didn't mind. Like, it was filler, but at least it was entertaining filler. Like, I'm a sucker for that lucha flippy business, so like, I thought that was fine. But the post match, like, come the fuck on, what are we doing? David D-Ray takes the world's worst spine buster from David Young, and Mike Posey, who I think weighs 95 pounds soaking wet, throws a drop kick and magically David Young flies across the ring. So I think your boy Mike Posey is going to have a match. So maybe he's a better wrestler than he is referee. So that's something to look forward to. But yeah, the match was fine, but I thought the post-match was pretty rotten. So I ended up going a star and a half on this.
What'd you think of Don West's math there at the end?
Oh, God, Don West. Like, I'm a Don West. I like Don West overall. Like, he gets pretty good at his job. But you didn't need to say that. Who told you to say that?
Ben, what do you think of this one?
Is Don West math worse or better than Steinemath? That's the big question.
Oh, it's worse.
It's definitely worse.
So I didn't particularly like the minis in 97 and 98. I don't like them now. So I only went half a star on the match itself. Speaking of Mr. West, he was unintentionally the highlight of the match itself with his aren't they cute little fellas? It's like, John, they're adults, mate. Just because they're small, they're adults. They're not kids. They're not kids pretending to have a wrestling match in your back garden. So the match itself was okay. The bit after the match was terrible. But your boy Posey can throw a mean drop kick.
That he can. I mean, and Pyroth had to be like right on the cusp of not being a mini. Like, he's probably almost my size. Yes. He was huge.
He was a big fella, wasn't he?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know Sagrada's really small, but, like, I mean, Pyroth is almost like a normal-sized kind of guy.
The Mexican mini commission need to investigate him post-haste, I think.
Yeah, like, that's what I was going to say. He's like Kevin Sullivan size, pretty much.
Yeah, like, I want to see him next to Rey Mysterio, see how much, like, smaller
yeah,
he
like,
is. Jake, go ahead and give us your thoughts.
Yeah, the match itself was pretty decent. I went 2 stars on it. They kind of worked because even though it's 2 minis, I felt like they worked it like a big guy versus little guy. So I guess it's like a little guy versus a littler guy. And kind of had, Pyroth working the heel kind of thing. I thought it was kind of when his mask fell off, that seemed like it wasn't supposed to happen. And they had to kind of like stall out for a minute so he wouldn't get exposed. Cause he imagined this guy's like, am I really going to have my mask come off in this, this like throwaway match on this random show that they got us in here for? And today I actually covered it because he said in a real lucha match, if you it's like a DQ if you take somebody's mask off in a non-mask match, which I didn't know. So today, informative as usual. It was fine. The post-match thing, so Posey looks like he's wearing his dad's shirt. He's a gigantic shirt on, like you said, and he's tiny. And I kind of enjoyed the post-match thing just from like an absurdity level because it's just like it just kept getting more absurd. And they come by to David Young on the ass and then Posey pulls out the drop kick. It's just like, good Lord. It was almost like reached that level of just like I enjoyed it just from the absurdity. My whole thing with this is like I just don't get the point. I could see if you're like doing a super show or something and you're trying to fill like 3 or 4 hours and you don't have the roster for it. But if you think about the people we don't see on this card, like, I don't really know why. And it kind of goes back to last match, too. So we have a manager in a 15-minute match. Then we have this random minis match. I mean, they have a lot of really talented people who are not on this show. Like, think about all those guys in the, all the guys in that X Division match you just watched. And, like, pretty much none of them are on this show. I mean, right? I mean, unless I'm forgetting something.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. So it kind of, to me, it's like this is this big show. It's your 2-year anniversary. I mean, obviously, think the X Division is arguably one of the things they push the hardest to just, I don't know why you need this. It's just so strange to me. Why would you put this, the most fillery thing on here when you have all those guys who are just, you know, these great workers and stuff, and you're just going to, it's just baffling to me. I don't get it.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, I was saying even after in the post match, attack of the last match, like you have all of Team Canada and all of the 3 of those X Division guys, you could have had a 6-man or even like an 8-man, like they could have interrupted that Damore Lynn match early, and they could have kind of turned it into an 8-man tag or something like that. So, that's even just 6 guys you wasted. Yeah. But
I'm glad Jacob mentioned about the referee shirts because I did make a note of them. It just seems like they got like a job lot offer on some double XL shirts, except all the rest are a medium. So the shirts are at least 2 sizes too big for them all.
Posey wears a schmedium and he was wearing a 5X.
Jacob, it must have been like the Kurt Angle shirt where it's only in 2XL or bigger. Ruthlessly aggressive, but the grunting from Pyroth really just annoyed the shit out of me, so I was like completely out of this whole segment. So I mean it just, but you know, it was what it was. But after this, we go back to Scott Hudson again, this time with D'Lo Brown. D'Lo Brown says the only reason he came back from Japan was he wants the NWA world title. which D'Lo Brown in Japan is just a hilarious thought all to itself. But he's immediately jumped by Monty Brown after this, who says D'Lo will never be world champ because he is the alpha male, and tells him to go bobble his head somewhere else.
Oh, that was a great line. I chuckled at that quite a bit, let me tell you.
It was hilarious because he said it to him.
Monty is my boy. Monty is my boy.
Yeah, I was just saying, Monty Brown and Abyss don't get used on this, so, you know, your two monsters don't even get used on this pay-per-view, so. But up next, after that interview, is the X Division title match, and we get our usual championship match bullet points. The first one is that AJ is just phenomenal, just talking about how amazing the stuff in all the matches that AJ Styles has. The second bullet point was injuries cost Cash the title shot. Obviously, the leg injury kept Kid Cash out of this match. And then the final bullet point is, who is the challenger for AJ Styles? Kind of pushing who the mystery opponent was. AJ's out first, and he awaits who his mystery opponent is. They were supposed to show the fourth and final clue, but they just kind of show the cryptic video where it says, see you in the future or whatever, and then it eventually flashes up that the mystery opponent is none other than Jeff Hardy, and the crowd goes absolutely wild. Jake, what did you think of Jeff Hardy being the mystery opponent?
Well, I have to say it made complete sense. Like, not like the videos made sense, but like it made sense that it would be Jeff Hardy with these absurd videos, because I feel like that's like kind of his thing. Sorry, this is kind of a tangent, but like Logan, you may know, and this kid, maybe the other guys too, but Jeff Hardy always reminds me, like, I feel like there was a lot of guys like I went to high school with where they're almost like, they're kind of like hillbilly-ish, kind of rednecky, but like they like think that they're like intellectuals, and they like do a bunch of drugs and like, you know, are kind of like act like Jeff Hardy, and they're always trying to talk to you about like this like pseudo intellectual stuff, and you're like, you're not saying anything, like, you know what I mean? And I feel like that's like Jeff Hardy's whole thing, is that, you know, like to him those vignettes are like so deep and all, but really it's just nonsense, because that's kind of his I guess that's kind of his whole vibe.
That is so stunningly accurate.
Yeah, so like as soon as it was Jeff, I was like, oh, okay, it makes sense. That seems like something Jeff Hardy would come up with, like all this ridiculous, like, see the future, whatever, like this absurdity.
I'm proper deep, man.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's like a guy who's like, yeah, he tries to tell you how deep he is, and you're just like, what are you talking about? This is nonsense. So
these people on this plane of existence, they just don't understand me, man.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he would be into 311 and stuff, and like have you know, like super into it, smoke a bunch of weed and do mushrooms.
He's just like a mid-level kid. It's at university or college, or however you want to phrase it. He thinks he's took some drugs. He is like an intellectual now. He's like, yeah, I can hang around with these boys. I've read a few books. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah. So, but it was, it did seem like a big moment. Like, he's obviously a big name for them to get right here. And on paper, I mean, it's a big match. So it was a cool moment that they revealed, you know, that it was Jeff Hardy. I mean, he is a big star, so good for them. So it was a cool reveal. It was a cool moment finding out it was him.
Yeah, I know exactly the guy from high school that you're talking about. But Matt, what do you think of the fact that it was Jeff Hardy as the mystery opponent?
Yeah, I remember this being a pretty big deal at the time for TNA. Like, to this point, I mean, probably outside of Raven, Jeff Hardy is probably the biggest free agent signing they get to this point. So, I mean, just a pretty big get for TNA to get this popular of a guy under their umbrella. So it's good stuff for TNA for sure.
I got you. Ben, what do you think of Hardy as the mystery opponent?
So echoing what Matt said, probably the biggest get that they could get at that point, you know, as far as a free agent goes. The first thing though to say is I had forgotten how awful that Jeff Hardy music was. Like, I heard it and I was like, oh god.
Modest.
I actually forgot it was this show. I actually forgot it was this show he made his debut at. So as soon as the music hit, I was like, oh fuck. But the crowd absolutely love and adore him. It is like having Guns N' Roses in the asylum, isn't it? That's the kind of reaction he gets. It's actually pretty crazy if you think about it.
Yeah, they go pretty batshit when his name flashes up and he comes out, especially all the ladies. But yeah, our next match is going to be AJ Styles versus Jeff Hardy. We're also informed at the beginning of this match that Raven's ceremony for the Sheik will be next. It's kind of weird to think that this was kind of a dream match at the time. Like, this is awesome that Hardy and Styles are going against each other. And it's weird to think now, 16 years later, you could just kind of see this on any random episode of SmackDown. So I thought that was a kind of weird parallel to come up with. But, both men trade offense early, eventually getting to the point where they start trading chops. AJ ends up kind of going underhanded and kicks him in the knee to take the advantage. After this, Styles continues to work over Hardy's knee to kind of take away his high-flying offense. To come back in the match, Hardy hits his little twisting leg screw move that he does, and then he does a pretty cool crossbody to the outside. We then get another kind of back-and-forth segment where they're kind of hitting each other with moves and kind of reversing everything else. This eventually culminates with Jeff Hardy hitting the Whisper in the Wind. And after the Whisper of the Wind is hit, Kid Cash and Dallas come out and ruin the match, ending it in a no contest. Hardy and Styles eventually team up to take out both Cash and Dallas before having kind of a cool stare down to a tease that they may eventually face off again. I think this is where a lot of the time in the Damore-Lynn match could have gone. I feel like if they could have gotten just a little bit more time, this could have been a pretty good match. I just don't think they ever really got going and never really had the opportunity to, just because of how and what the finish was. Matt, what'd you think of this one?
Yeah, criminally short was my biggest takeaway from this. I mean, barely goes 7 minutes, and like the moves in it were fine, but it was just way too short, and it never really got out of like first gear. And like, I'm kind of okay with that, but I'm kind of not, like, because this whole thing, it was more about the moment than the match itself. Jeff Hardy, you know, showing up in TNA. But if that's the case, why are you having a match like Jeff Hardy versus AJ Styles? I think you could have had like somebody come out and do an open challenge and Jeff Hardy answers that. And then maybe you do AJ versus like Hector Garza, who just won that match on Impact, and do something like that. I think that might have been better off. But like, as is, the match was just okay. Like, I went 2 stars on it, but like, I thought the match was secondary. It was more about Hardy's debut than it was the match itself.
Yeah, I agree. Ben, what did you think of this one?
So, first question, because I don't think any of us could particularly answer this, but I've always been interested. What do women find so attractive about Jeff Hardy? Am I missing something? It's like, you know, the squeals of the t-shirt come off. I'm like, he's got a really scrawny body. What's that? I don't want to look at that. Like Matt said, the match is way too short. It's criminally short. I did like, though, that the crowd was split. So, yeah, they loved Hardy, but they didn't lose their love for AJ through the match. I get why it was short, though, with the no contest and what it's building towards. So, in a way, I haven't got a problem with it, but they could have quite easily have cut the minis match or cut a ton of time off the Lynn and Damore match and passed it on to this. I went 2 stars as well.
Yeah, this one was way, way shorter than it should have been. It was actually, I just looked it up, it was the shortest match of the night. Even shorter than the minis match. So,
because that half hour just went way too long, didn't it? So they wait. You know, the two guys who can actually have a good match, you won't bother with them.
For real, though. Jake, what'd you think?
Yeah, pretty much in line with everybody. 2 stars. It was more of like a tease of what a match between them could be, but nothing. You know, not enough time to really build a match. So, like y'all have been saying, it's a weird position because I kind of get where they're going. You don't want to just let them empty out the tank when it kind of, they haven't even hyped it up to get people to buy the pay per view based on this. So I get maybe you don't want to let them do too much. I think you could have got away with letting them have a little bit more of a real match. It's just, I guess the finish is tough because I guess if you let them go too long and then you stick with the same finish, that's pretty deflating too. If they're really having this awesome match and then Cash just runs in and, you know, that could suck too. I guess you maybe could have done it in a way where like Cash screws up the match, but not so obvious, like not just a straight run in and end the match. Like maybe he just does something a little more sneaky or something. I don't know. But, there was a point where I thought it was funny where Tanay called AJ did the phenomenal for him, and he called it the sensational springboard, which I thought was kind of funny. but yeah, I could, it's like one where I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. It's kind of a tough position. I get what they're saying because they wanted to say there was a Jeff Hardy AJ match, but I kind of get why they didn't want to empty the tank. But it probably could have been a little bit longer and still not, you know, killed it. So yeah, 2 stars. A tease of a match.
Yeah, and I get what you're saying, but I even think that they could have gone a little longer and maybe Hardy almost wins the match, but yeah. Styles or Cash comes out and breaks up the pin after Hardy hits the Swanton or something, because you kind of leave the fact that you never know if Hardy would have won or not, or you know, so it could kind of set up for a possible rematch in the future. But I get what you're saying, and you're probably right in how they were thinking. But
it's at least an example of, like, you know, it wasn't like obvious what they should have done. Like, you know, at least it's a thing. Like, there's certain things that they that it's like the match earlier where we're like, I don't know what you were thinking. Where this one, I guess it's like you could kind of maybe understand where they're coming from at least.
Yeah, I agree with you. After this match, we go back to Shane Douglas, who's looking for Raven. And then he welcomes us to Raven's ceremony. It ends up just being like a skeleton dressed as the Sheik hanging from a noose from the ceiling with the words "Nevermore Raven" on a sign on its chest. Sabu comes in and is disgusted. And then Mickey Doyle, who was one of the legends that they showed earlier, who apparently was real good friends with the Sheik, comes in and talks to Sabu and tells Sabu that he came here for 2 reasons, to see this so-called ceremony and to see what's going on in Sabu's head. Says this has become about respect between Sabu and Raven, and Raven has done nothing but disrespect him this whole time. Tells him to do the right thing and, you know, go after Raven for disrespecting his family. We then go back to Tanay and Wes, who plug the website as along with the, I think they plug the gut check that you can sign up for the next gut check.
You can get trained by Jerry Lynn, who just got beat up by an overweight manager.
Doesn't everybody want to do that? They also plug next week's contest for the pay-per-view. It's going to be the double ultimate humiliation match between NYC and Kenny and Siaki. They also plug Watts and Abyss is going to be next week, along with Monty Brown and D'Lo Brown. So you better get down with the Brown for that match. You get a double dose. The Naturals will finally take on AMW next week. And then they do a little segment where they introduce all of the legends to the crowd, kind of telling who each of them are. Matt, what did you think of the little so-called Raven ceremony and these kind of segments?
the Raven ceremony was fairly basic, more built to the eventual Raven Sabu match. The pay-per-view next week looks like a rather rotten show, if I may say. When Eric Watts is in a marquee match, you know you're going to be in for a rough night. So there's that. And yeah, the Legend stuff was fine. I mean, not much to say about them introducing the Legends.
Gotcha. Jake, what'd you think of the interview or the ceremony and the matches announced for next week?
I have to be honest, when they start going over the matches for the next week, I kind of space out. I feel like they would be better off if they had some graphics or something to go along with it, because it's, I don't know what it is, but I just always end up spacing out and kind of have this thing like, well, I'll see it when we'll get there and I'll figure it out then kind of thing. So I guess maybe it's not effective on me in what it's supposed to be doing. Yeah, the Raven stuff was weird because I kind of thought they had hyped that he was going to do something a little crazier on this pay-per-view, which I guess maybe is saved for later or something. Like, if I recall, they said something about, like, he's going to do the most heinous thing ever or something like that. So I felt like it was going to be some a little more involved than just this quick, like, he made a puppet thing or whatever, like, you know. And they also did the, I don't know if you mentioned, they did the NWA, like the Legends, and they just, like the way they're all dressed, like Larry Z in his like colorful shirt, they look like they all just like came back from like the Shoney's breakfast buffet and, like, to come watch the show. Like, can you imagine what like Larry Zbyszko must think when he's watching this? He's probably not paying attention. He's probably like, you know what I mean?
We got the bingo. We got bingo at 6, wrestling at 9. We'll get them all in.
Yeah, like. Yeah, they just hit the Waffle House and came over here.
Yeah,
they're dinner at 4, bed by 6.
Yeah, they're definitely about to go play bingo after this. And I don't know if it was here or earlier. I think they show them at some point, but they get a close in on Sara Lee, and she just looks mortified, like she has no idea where she is or what she's doing.
Just this.
I mean,
shock and horror on her face. Why am I in an airport hangar with all these people? I'm watching a fat Canadian beat up a Jerry Lynn. I'm watching. What is going on?
I could be at home watching MacGyver.
She should have been with Dusty in the back watching Gunsmoke on Impact.
TV.
But yeah, she just looked mortified, and apparently her and Corsica Joe are, which is an awful name on top of that, but apparently they're married, so glad they got that.
What's going on at that table?
Yeah, maybe she looked over and that's why she was horrified, who knows. But after these few segments, we go to a package for the main event, kind of chronicling where the feud is taking us to this point. And we get our NWA world title match between Ron the Truth Killings and Jeff Jarrett. They do the bullet points for this one, and it's the first one's the King of the Mountain, kind of talking about how Jarrett won the King of the Mountain match a few weeks ago. Can Jarrett handle Truth? Truth had defeated him in the gauntlet match from 2 weeks ago, and you know, kind of has a victory over him. So can he kind of handle Truth? Kind of wild style and attacks. And then the last one is Use It or Lose It, talking about if he uses the guitar, immediate disqualification will take place. When Jarrett's coming out, it looks like a fan takes like a swing at him, and Jarrett really looks kind of pissed. And he kind of looks like he wants to swing back at him, but he obviously can't for obvious reasons. We then kind of get the world title match introductions, and the ref goes over the rules, which prompts Russo to come out and look to see if Jarrett has any guitars stored away under the ring. He finds it and starts to take it to the back, but Zbyszko comes and pipes up and tells Russo that finding one guitar was just way too easy. So they go and search for another and actually find another one way under the ring. The match finally starts with a lockup where neither competitor really gets the advantage. Tanay points out that this is the first world title match in the six-sided ring. Truth uses some quick offense to kind of frustrate Jarrett. Jarrett stalls a lot by standing on the ramp, trying to kind of wait out the 10 count to see if he's trying to bait Truth to come out and kind of attack him. Jarrett eventually gets back in the ring and reverses an Irish whip and takes over. At this point, apparently the guitar is the only weapon that's not allowed in this match because Jarrett just starts using a chair and bashes Truth with it twice. So apparently this is no DQ other than guitars. So apparently weapons are totally legal other than guitars. They then fight over towards the legend, and Jarrett eventually does the stroke through the table off of the stage, which was kind of a cool spot. In kind of another terrible refereeing moment, shockingly, it wasn't Posey. It was Rudy Charles this time. But he doesn't count like the whole 5 or 6 minutes that they're just walking around. But once Jarrett comes back in the ring after hitting the stroke, he starts counting Truth out. So I really didn't understand why he wasn't counting the whole time, and he just started counting when Jarrett got back in the ring. Jarrett puts Truth in the figure four, which brings BG James and Conan out, and then they immediately get thrown out, which makes you wonder why they even came out in the first place. Truth takes advantage back by hitting a sit-out spinebuster. Truth reverses an attempted stroke from the middle rope and hits a bulldog, but only gets two. Truth then attempts an axe kick from the second rope, but misses, but then eventually follows it up with hitting this like sit out muscle buster type move, which was pretty sweet and kind of brutal. Looks like Jarrett kind of landed kind of gnarly on his neck. So, but yeah, that was definitely a brutal spot. Jarrett then tries to crawl to the outside and eventually pushes Truth into the ref, which allows him to nail Truth with the belt, but the belt shot only gets him two. Truth then goes for a crossbody on Jarrett and knocks out the ref once again, and Jarrett goes and finds a third guitar, goes and gets a third guitar under the steps. Truth blocks the initial swing of the guitar, and they kind of play tug of war over it for a little bit, and Truth finally gets hold of it and absolutely nails Jarrett with the guitar and actually scores the three count and seemingly wins the world title. A couple of other refs and Russo come out to meet about the ending of the match. Russo seems kind of torn, like whether he wants to keep kind of screw Jarrett and keep Truth with the belt, but Dusty comes out and tells him to make the right decision with his heart and not his head. We actually don't end up knowing who the world champion is, but we'll find out on Impact apparently. So we actually don't end up knowing who the world champion is at the end of the night. Jake, what do you think of this world title match?
Okay. First of all, has anybody seen the movie Mars Attacks? So yes. So in the movie, whenever they figure out the way to kill the aliens is to play that opera music and it makes their brains pop. And so that's like Jarrett's music when he's like. It's like that's what I feel like as the aliens in Mars Attacks when their heads pop. So I thought they've done a pretty good job of building this and kind of making it feel like a big match that matters, which is good. I thought the stuff for Russo checking the ring was just dragged on a little bit too long, wasn't really necessary. You know, enough with the guitar thing, just let the match do its thing. Like, I don't know. It's like, I don't want to just put my, you know, like the common things people say about Russo into it, but it's just like too much emphasis on this, you know, even though the match is not really a gimmick, just too much emphasis on the guitar and all this extra crap. Like, we got it. If he uses the guitar, he's DQ'd. We don't want him to use a guitar. Like, it's too much. Just let it go. It's a big title match. Let it be a big title match. Like the match itself, I feel like what they're going for, I feel like Jarrett's trying in his mind to do like a Flair thing, like with all the stalling at the beginning, he's trying to be like heel Ric Flair, but he cannot pull it off because it just felt like the match never got, it just never builds momentum. Like, I feel like you can do all that stalling if it escalates, you know, if you build to it and the match builds and builds, but it just didn't. It felt very disjointed. Like, they start with the stalling and then it kind of got into the brawling stuff on the outside. I thought his move, the stroke or whatever, like, into the table is just a weird move to do into a table. It doesn't really work for me as a move into a table. And it's just, the whole thing just felt really, it was just an awkward match. Like, it just never really built any momentum or heat to me. And I think the crowd reaction shows it, because I think they're both fairly over in their roles. Like, Truth is a pretty over face. I mean, they did say, like, you can't handle the Truth or whatever the crowd was chanting, but it never really got like crowd heat where you could feel the crowd like they were building to a finish or anything, and it just never really got going, and it felt pretty long. So I went 1.5 stars on it. I thought it was pretty disappointing, considering, you know, all the hype that they put into it. It just meandered, and then the finish was just like, it's like a shard of a finish. Like, it was just so lame. I just feel like this is, I mean, maybe you could say it's too predictable or something, but again, it's kind of the same thing with Jerry Lynn beating up the manager. This is your big show you've been building to. You know, Truth has been dealing with Jared. Jared's a big heel. He's over. Let it be a big moment for him. Let him come in. Even though Jared's nefarious, let him get the win. You know, let the crowd erupt on this big show. Let him win the championship and then move it from there. And then instead you get this weird nonsense at the end where they're discussing, and I just didn't get it. It's just, it's too much. It's overcomplicated. And it was just a disappointing match for me. I was hoping for a lot better. I know Jared's Jared, but I still thought it could be better than what it was. So I don't know.
Yeah, it definitely should have been better than it was. And I know Matt's chomping at the bit. So what do you think of this one?
God, I hated this match so much. Just from beginning to end, you have the nonsensical crap where he's looking for the guitars, and then a guitar is still used because they didn't look under the stairs. The one place they didn't look, under the stairs. They look under the ring, halfway to the end of the, you know, ring, but you can't look under the stairs. Oh, I hated that. The match, they didn't know what type of match they wanted to do. They started as a wrestling match, then it turned into a Memphis stall fest, then it turns into a brawl. Like, pick something and stick with it. Like, and this match, it only goes 14 minutes. So all that stuff you just described happened in 14 minutes. Think about that for a minute. Like, just completely overbooked. And checked off every single Russo trope that he gets shit on for, and rightfully so. Not a no DQ match, but treated as such. Chairs are legal, but guitars are not. I don't know what the difference is. I absolutely hated this. Shoot this match into the sun, 1.5 stars.
Yeah, I was just say I missed the point where it was a no DQ match other than guitars. But Ben, what'd you think of this one?
So first thing, I really like the fact that they treated the match like a big deal. You know, we've been quite critical of TNA for that. So they treat this, you know, it's been well. And to be fair to him, I think it has been a well built match at least. If we're talking like fashion statements and, you know, whatever for earlier on, this is our first time looking at Jeremy Borash's hair properly. I mean, 2000, them frosted tips, man. I mean, you know, I really can't talk about hair, but that was awful. Onto the match itself, like Matt says, it didn't know what match it wanted to be. It didn't know whether it wanted to be a scientific match. It didn't know whether it wanted to be a hardcore match. It didn't know whether it wanted to be a Memphis Southern style brawl. As we discussed earlier on, we all knew the guitar was going to be the difference maker. It was just how they were going to do it. I didn't mind the fact it was on the one place they didn't check. I actually thought that was kind of a bit clever, but I can see why it pissed a few people off. But yeah, so, you know, it was that kind of thing of it was the difference maker in the match. I think it was Logan who said the stroke, yeah, should never be used as a table bump move. I liked Truce Bulldog off the top rope. That was really cool. I went 2.25 stars.
Holy mackerel.
I know. I've only just watched this, so, you know, like... I usually watch things twice, but I only got a chance to watch this the once. But yeah, I went 2.25. I get the feeling if I watch it a second time, it could go lower though.
Yeah, and I didn't get to talk about the finish. Fuck that finish. Big show like a second anniversary show, and you do a fuck finish. Like it just didn't make any sense.
Yeah, you want people to tune in again to the next show, but you don't want to give them a foot finish like that along the way.
I mean, I guess they did a good job by getting people to like tune into Impact by leaving it kind of up in the air. But yeah, it's just overall super stupid.
I guess the argument would be you could get people to tune in because now you have this new champion that's pretty over as a face. You know, how's Jared going to react to finally? You know, so I get that it's just like they have a problem paying stuff off. You know, it's just like they can't execute the payoff. Like a lot of this stuff has had a decent build. It's just, they don't pay it off well.
Exactly.
On a show that's kind of the purpose of this show. It's been built pretty well, but then all the payoffs are just lame.
Yeah. The buildups have been good, but the payoffs have been sadly lacking.
And my argument to that would be, if you want people to tune into Impact to watch a new champion, then just have him win the title clean as a sheet. You know, you don't need the fuck finish.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like maybe they thought that like, who is the champion? You know, because they kind of leave it up in the air. But it is stupid.
It's reminded me a lot of Sting and Hogan from Starrcade. It's just, they're just trying to be too clever for their own good.
Right.
Yeah. All right, well. that finishes up the second anniversary show. We'll go back to Matt. What was your thoughts on the show as a whole and your score rating out of 10?
Pretty bad. I don't remember what I scored the last show, the last time I was on. I think I went like 3.5 or so. This show kind of fills that similar headspace that show did. So I went 3.5 on this one too. Just not a lot of good, a whole lot of bad, and a whole lot of stupid.
Yeah, I feel you on that one. Jake, what'd you give it?
Yeah, I almost think the other one that we all kind of, the one Matt's talking about that we all crapped on, I almost feel like this one's worse in that the other one felt sort of like a filler show that they're just throwing stuff out there, where this one is like they built it up and then just whiffed on it. And so it's almost worse just because it was so disappointing. And just it's so weird to me, like tonally, this show. It's almost like when you watch Impact, they're trying to get across like this, you know, all these athletes and it's super fast paced and all this stuff. And then we get to this show and it's like, it just felt like it dragged, like with that Damore match and all, it just felt like it hit a wall and the pace just, and the main event was plodding, you know, it almost seems like the opposite of the kind of thing they're going for an Impact on this. So it's just weird, but it was really disappointing. I went 3 out of 10 on this one.
Gotcha. Ben, what were your thoughts and scoring?
So on the last show I did with you, I scored the pay-per-view as a 4. I thought this was a worse show than that. For all the build and all the hype, like I just said, you know, they've built everything up well, but the payoffs were just so bad. And that middle half hour just absolutely killed anything for me. I'm going to go 3.5.
Yeah, I think I'm with you guys. I think it's kind of in the 3.5-ish range. Just a lot of dumb booking. You know, same thing with that show that we've previously covered. You can just tell that Russo and Jarrett's fingers are all over the main event, and you know, or what Jarrett's match per se. But you know, Jarrett just, I think he has a higher opinion of himself than what his actual talent brings to the table. But yeah, this was as much hype as was brought into this show. It ended up being super, super disappointing. So yeah, I'm kind of with you guys on the 3.5 kind of area. We'll go on to our awards, which were super hard to do because nobody really stood out. And Nobody really stood out in the stuff that wasn't bad, and then there was a bunch of bad on top of it. But Jake, who'd you go for over your MVP of the two shows?
I kind of just went with AJ, just because, you know, he just kind of always does. Like we said, on these shows, he wasn't really put in position much to have anything incredible, but he still, I mean, he's probably in two of the better matches that we saw on all this, and he's really over at the moment. So he's probably, he kind of wins by default, I guess, for me.
I got you. Ben, who'd you have at MVP?
My exact quote from my notes, not to Nick, but Jacob just said, is AJ by default.
All right, Matt, who'd you go with?
Yeah, I had AJ too, but I do want to give a shout out to Trinity. I thought she looked really good in that stretcher match with that ass first balcony dive through a table.
Yeah, just due to the fact that nobody really stood out, AJ's definitely the best competitor out there. So I'll actually go with AJ too. I'll give a brief thumbs up to Scott D'Amore for really going out of his area and, you know, really dominating that match. So I'll give a little tidbit to him. But what about LVP, Matt?
Oh God, Jarrett, not even close.
Ben, who do you have for LVP?
Jointly, Davey Jung and D-Ray.
Gotcha. Jake, who do you have?
Yeah, I have to go with what Matt said. Easily Jarrett for the position he's put in. I mean, I guess my thing would be like guys like D-Ray and all are, you know, not great, but I mean, they're just kind of not in any position. So, yeah, easily Jarrett.
I'll change my mind. I'll go with Jarrett now. The boys are persuaded.
There you go.
The boys are persuaded. Well,
keep the Jarrett hate train continuing. I like it.
They're right, because, you know, D-Ray was basically on camera for 5 minutes. You know, Jarrett was on for like half an hour over the two shows at least.
Yeah, I gotcha. Well, I'm going to be the contrarian then. I went with Russo. I feel like he kind of over-involved himself in everything. I think I gave it to him last episode as well. But yeah, I'm going to go with Russo. I feel like he's on my screen way too much for.
And I don't think we mentioned that Russo needs to fire the makeup artist that put on that fake eye black underneath his eyes too. Jesus.
Yeah, rough tub, Matt. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, LVP to the makeup artist. I'm just kidding. best match. I went with the X Division 6-way from Impact. Ben, what'd you go with?
I went with the stretcher match.
All right. Jake, what'd you go with?
Yeah, I'm with you, Logan. Opener from Impact, the X Division match.
I got you. Matt, what'd you have?
I went with the stretcher match, too.
All right. Yeah, I mean, the stretcher match probably number two for me, but yeah, I really like that X Division clusterfuck vest. So, best moment, Matt, what'd you go with?
Trinity's balcony dive, like I mentioned earlier.
I gotcha. Jake, what'd you go with?
I went with Jeff, like to reveal that I was going to be Jeff Hardy in that match.
I gotcha. Ben, what was your best moment?
Because I'm a sucker for the move, Abyss's Black Hole Slam.
Gotcha. I went with the cradle pile driver that Lynn gave D'Amore. I thought he really just dropped him on his head, and I thought it was pretty brutal. But we're going to go to our highway-themed awards. Who was in your express lane on this episode? Jake.
There wasn't a ton on here because, like you said earlier, Logan, even people that we've enjoyed maybe didn't really do anything to elevate themselves. So I went with AJ just because he continued. I think the Jeff Hardy thing for me kind of makes the stock go up a little bit, being, you know, that he got paired off with Jeff. And AMW, even though they didn't do anything spectacular, they're still solid champions. But other than that, I couldn't think of too many people that I felt like their stock was rising necessarily, which kind of sucks.
Yeah, these awards are really hard. And I kind of pulled at straws. So when I get to mine, Ben, who'd you have in your express lane?
I went with the Naturals and AMW. It wasn't spectacular, but it was a good solid build to the tag match.
Gotcha. Matt, who'd you have in your express lane?
I went with AJ again, kind of by default, and actually went with Hector Garza. He got a pretty big win in the six-way match, and feels like he should be due for a title shot at some point. So,
yeah, I gotcha. I went with Tanay's commentary. I really feel like he kind of picked up his game this week, so I gave a little bump to Mike Tanay. He kind of really got into more of the details on Impact and the pay-per-view this week, so I gave him a little bump. And then I went with Jeff Hardy just because the debut was kind of a cool moment, so I think it'll be interesting to see where he goes in the future. And trending down our exit lane, Jake, who'd you have in your exit lane?
Yeah, that's a good point. Just to go back to that, I guess as somebody that's new to this, now that y'all say it, I guess Jeff's going to stick around. I didn't know if it was kind of like a one-shot deal kind of thing, just to bring him in. But yeah, he's headed up if he's here. But trending down, definitely Double J. Jared's definitely trending down. NYC, definitely trending down, because I'm just tired of that whole whatever double humiliation crap. And not really necessarily his fault, but I just think, I mean, at least as a character and the way he's been presented, Jerry Lynn, I think, is just hurt by that match.
Gotcha. Matt, who'd you have in your exit lane?
Yeah, I had Jarrett and Jerry Lynn, too. That match did Jerry Lynn zero favors, and Jeff Jarrett is Jeff Jarrett.
Ben, who'd you have in your exit lane?
So I think you could pick any two of four people, and they are Kazarian, Sabin, Michael Shane, and Primetime. Basically, that six-way match is a good match, but they are just treated like afterthoughts. They don't even get mentioned on the pay-per-view. At least Great Value Muta gets another match, and obviously Garza wins. So I won't count them two in, but the other four, I think any two from them four.
I gotcha. My first one is all refs and authority figures. that whole debacle at the end of the pay-per-view with the all the refs coming out and Russo and Zbysko and all that shit. I just that they can all go away, fire all the refs, get rid of Russo.
And then whoever brought all them ref shirts as well, but that they need firing.
Yeah, the Joseph A. Bank that they got all those. And my second on the exit lane is David Young. I just thought he looked real stupid, and you know, if they're not really going to give him matches every week, he doesn't need to be on my screen. But that'll wrap us up for our show tonight. I appreciate everybody listening, and I appreciate all you guys coming on with me tonight. And we will be back next time to cover Impact episode number 4 and weekly pay-per-view number 101. We'll see you next time. Thank you so much. Beware, coming for you. The remix, Three Live Crew, still getting rowdy. Oh, you didn't know? We the 3LK. Beware, it's the remix. And we still getting rowdy. The 3LK, mic check, cause the mic, 1, 2, 3, you got the truth, K-Dog, MVG, and we do the damn thing because we can, and I am the Sundance Superman, I be stepping like the big black Incredible Hulk, but hold on, you know what they say, if you study long, you study wrong, at NWA, we be standing strong, we be cooking like neck bone, smoking like Cheech and Chong, picking no competition, in your opposition, see the 3 Live Crew hit switches, and then we knock the doors down, hey. We're the NWA Tag Champions now. Beware, coming for you. It's the remix. The 3 Live Crew still getting rowdy. Oh, you didn't know that we the 3LK. Beware, coming for you. It's the remix. 3 Live Crew still getting rowdy. I'm singing orderly. Oh, you didn't know that we the 3LK. Bow, wow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yay. Arriba la raza all day, every day. I'm back with that chick with it though. I'm a pro, I'm a hustler, I'm the grind, and attacking that tax-free dough. No, see, no, the 3 Live Crew be like, whoa, bring it back, give me that flow. A redneck and a spink backed up by a negro. Beware, coming for you. It's the remix. 3 Live Crew still getting rowdy. This mother is a bad jam. Oh, you didn't know? We the
coming for you. It's the remake that the three love. Improved you getting about it.
Because we can, and he is the suntan Superman.
Total non-stop action. AWA, TNA with satisfaction. Y'all ain't got no party, compared to us, y'all sorry. But we got something for you. But our land, smoking like Cheech and Chong.